The Wisconsin Policy Research Institute released a new study on state government tax structure, and that report suggests major changes to help grow Wisconsin's economy. Thanks to Paul Bachman, Research Director at Beacon Hill Institute for Public Policy Research at Suffolk University and an author of the report, Can State Pull Its Punches? Thanks for joining us, Paul, to talk about this.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
I really appreciate it. Let's start with a premise. What's wrong with Wisconsin's tax code? I will get to better. And one anchor quote is in the executive summary, so I want to go to that.
Sure.
The path to prosperity, though, starts with lower income taxes and property taxes and recognition from legislators that the current sales tax structure can and should be broadened. Mr. Bachman, what's wrong with our tax structure?
Well, if you look at the Wisconsin compared to other states, you'll see that its income taxes and its property taxes are pretty high relative to other states in terms of the amount of personal income, the amount of revenue it generates as a percentage of personal income. If you look at a recent study that was done, it's 11th in the country in terms of the amount of revenue generated from the personal income tax and the property taxes as a percentage of personal income. When we look at the sales tax, we see that it's 36th out of the states. Okay. So you're pretty high on the list, almost in the top 10 in terms of personal income tax and property tax, but you're almost at the bottom of the barrel in terms of sales tax.
Before we take a look at that, I have two follow-up questions. Number one, as your report notes, we have just cut we had three tax cuts in the last 20 months in the state of Wisconsin, and you guys score it, I mean, the report scores it, I don't mean you guys, at about $2 billion. Our ranking number 11 in the nation, was this before our recent tax cuts, sir?
I believe it was before most of the recent tax cuts have been in place. So you've gained a little bit.
Okay. Also, on page 4 of the report, you say the system remains progressive overall. So how bad is it if it's still progressive overall, sir?
Well, it depends on what your view of progressive is. But if it's progressive overall, that means you're talking about a higher portion of taxes taken from wealthier people than people with lower incomes. So, I mean, in that terms of progressive, you know, you're looking at a progressive income tax or a progressive tax system, or you could say it's progressive in terms of, you know, relative to other states you're making progress toward being sort of more of the middle of the pile,
okay,
the middle of the pack.
All right. Now, thanks for getting into that early. So now let's take a look at where some of our tax rank specifically, sir. Now,
sure.
This is so important. Let's go down. Do you want to go down at one by one, property tax?
Yeah. See, we see property tax takes 4.46% of personal income, and that is 11th again, and this is probably prior to some of the changes that have taken place.
And just a footnote, our property tax bills, I think this is the net figure, $9.6 billion is the number in the report. It's the single largest state or local tax in the state of Wisconsin. So we rank 11th. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. And that is, that's the largest, even larger than income tax, which normally income tax is pretty close.
But income is $7.3 billion. That's the personal income.
Correct.
Me.
Sure, and that's about 3% of personal income represents. And then as we noted earlier, you look at sales tax, and that's at about 2% or 36th relative to other states in the
and
country.
And this is our 5% state sales tax. When you add in, I think, more than our 40 counties with local option, I think our number's 44th. Do you know?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
But the point is, general sales is just our 5% state sales.
Right, right. So now you're looking at, if you're 44th, you're even looking further down when you add local sales tax.
Local options.
Sure.
Okay. Gas?
Gasoline tax, you're 10th. Again, you're pretty high on the gasoline tax area. Alcohol, you're at 38th.
We cheeseheads love our brew.
I know. As the capital of beer in America, I would not
I think it's been more than four decades since our gas tax, our beer tax has been increased.
Okay. Bless you. And then you have your corporate income tax. You're right about in the middle of the pack. A little bit high, but not one way or the other too, near the bottom or the top of the pack.
And that brings in $962 million again, according to your study.
Right.
Okay.
And that's generally about average for a state. There's not, it's rare that a state brings in over $1 billion in their corporate income tax. It's not one of your major taxes. Tobacco, you're fifth, so you're one of the leaders in the raising tobacco taxes. And then in general, if you add all these up together, you're at 11th, at almost 12% of personal income, people's personal income.
Now let's go back to the premise. Let me ask this. How do personal and corporate income tax rates and our property tax rate curb growth or disinvite growth?
Well, it's really at the what we call the economics profession at the margin, your marginal effort. So, for example, a corporate income tax, if you have an investment project and you're looking at the cost of borrowing to make that project, to make that investment take place, and you see that, okay, I have a borrowing cost of X and my return, my expected return is Y, but instead of having to make a profit in excess of the X, the borrowing cost, now you have X plus the tax. So it reduces. So at the margin, those projects that if the tax didn't exist would be approved and would go forward with the tax makes them not viable in a profitable sense. In another sense, in the income tax, if you're asked to work overtime, you know, the income tax has a wedge, and all taxes have a wedge. So we're familiar with the income tax wedge when we get our paycheck. You know, our salary is stated at X, say $50,000 a year, but when we get our paycheck, we get our take-home pay. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. And sometimes if you're asked to work overtime, or you're looking for more income, and you're at a certain point you're saying, well, maybe I won't make that extra effort because I know that a large portion of that extra marginal dollar is going to be sucked up by taxes.
You say it this way on page 5 of the report: income taxes, both individual and corporate, distort decisions to work, save and invest, and therefore threaten a state's ability to compete for residents and businesses. Then further down, by penalizing savings, the income tax shrinks investment and hence future production, productivity, and well-being.
Correct.
You want to elaborate on shrinking savings, which I find a very interesting concept?
It would be the opposite side of sort of the investment side. Investment comes from savings. The source of investment is savings. And if you have a savings account or you're making, putting a savings in bonds or whatnot, and you get taxed on that rate of return, again, your incentive to save is the interest rate you're going to get. And if when the after-tax interest rate takes away from what you're actually going to return on that savings, you're less likely to save. And especially in very low interest rate environment like we have today.
That's true. So our tax code amounts to a disincentive to save, and savings is a source of reinvestments by small business, by anyone?
Correct. Specifically small businesses. Your larger corporations can go to the capital markets in New York and so forth, but your small businesses are probably going to go and look to the local bank to get their invested capital, to get their financial capital. So those will probably be hurt more so by the lack of savings being put in those banks.
Okay. So now let's talk in overviews. Wisconsin could improve its tax code to grow more development in one of two ways, according to the study. We could cut our taxes, correct?
Correct.
Or we could broaden our tax base, correct?
Correct.
Okay, now let's first talk about cutting taxes. And I want to talk to you about the tax cut impact table.
Sure.
Walk us through scenario one and scenario two, because this just focuses on cutting taxes to improve our investment and development climate.
Correct.
Okay.
So when we look at the first scenario would reduce all your tax brackets by 10%. So the lowest, the second lowest, all the way up to the highest. And then it would reduce the corporate income tax to the highest marginal tax rate after the 10% tax cut, which would be 6.88%.
Yes.
In terms of the private economy, our estimate is that you generate over 11,000 private sector jobs. But however, you would, because you're taking money away from the public sector, there would be an impact on spending in the public sector. The public sector would have to either reduce consumption spending, investment spending, and spending on employment. And we see that the government employment would go down about 2,800 jobs.
So you'd net out at a gain of 8,470.
Correct. And this is all of these numbers are against the baseline of no tax change. We're not saying there's going to be, you know, positive or negative, regardless of whether there's positive or negative employment growth in the economy naturally, this will be above and beyond that.
Okay.
And then investment would grow by about $300 million, and these are by 2018. You'd be injecting about 1,100 $1.1 billion into the private economy of the disposable income of households.
Into the private economy.
Correct.
Because this next is very telling.
Right.
There would be a drop in tax collections, what we call general fund tax collections, of $918
Correct.
Million.
Correct.
Okay.
And that these are dynamic tax changes. These are this revenue estimate is dynamic. In other words, if you said you were going to cut the income tax rate by 10%, mm-hmm. there's static estimates out there which say that you would lose revenue by 10%. But what we estimate is dynamic. We say you are going to get 8,400 more jobs in the economy.
A net upper.
Yeah, so there's a net up. Your disposable income is going up. So your income tax collections would not be reduced by 10%. It'd be reduced more like 9% or 9.5%. You'd get the loss wouldn't be quite as large as one would expect if you were looking at purely the static numbers.
And again, this scenario assumes that we're going to help growth, economic development, growth in Wisconsin just by cutting taxes.
Correct.
Okay. Scenario number two.
Scenario number two is similar in that it's a tax cut, but it cuts property taxes. It reduces property taxes, the state property tax, by $80 million.
That's paid for forests and things like that. Okay, go
right,
ahead.
Right. It's a pretty small amount in the general scheme of things. And then reduce the technical college operating levy by about $200 million.
Okay.
And I believe that's already been reduced already. So this would sort of reduce it. This is
right.
on top of the reductions.
When you say the operating levy, is that off the $797 million that our tech colleges levy in property taxes? I think that's right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so walk us through what happens here.
Sure. So we get a private employment boost of about 2,200 jobs, 2,260, a government employment of about 1,930, and then we have a net employment increase of about 330 jobs. Investment is up by about 341. Real disposable income by $365 million, and then you have a revenue loss about $241 million.
Okay. That's if you just cut taxes.
Correct.
But the heart of this report says there's a better way, right?
Correct. And one thing to note here is that the property taxes tend to have a little bit less oomph, if you will, than income or sales tax. Generally, the property taxes, there's not a lot of action that you take when your property taxes go up. You're not necessarily going to move. Your options are kind of limited. You could rent, but then the property tax is included in your rental bill.
Right,
so the effects on the economy are a little bit more muted than the income tax so far.
Okay. So now step back. Instead of just cutting taxes, this report says there's a better way. Tell us what that better way is.
Well, another way would be to swap out some taxes. So since you've got the 11th highest income and property tax levies in the country as a percentage of personal income, you could lower those taxes while expanding on the 36th highest sales tax levy. So you could lower the income tax or the corporate income tax or the personal income tax and the property taxes while increasing the sales tax. But you could either increase the sales tax or you could expand the base. The sales tax base has been, in most states, and Wisconsin is no exception, has been linked and locked in on the economy that is goods producing.
Yes.
And
which
so.
Which is a 20th century model.
Right.
Correct?
Or really a mid 20th century
okay.
model.
Or a 19th century
right.
model.
Whereas we know now that most of the economic activity that's taken place in the last 30 years is through services. So we could look to expand the sales tax base to services, a faster growing area of the economy, and we could get a benefit there because the sales tax has a bit of a less, people are less likely to change their behavior in light of a expanded sales tax. But you're also lessening the income tax burden. People have earned the money already through the income tax, so you've got a lesser burden there. Then they only encounter the tax burden when they spend it.
Sales tax, in this context, in terms of encouraging growth and development, more fair, less fair? Because I've covered the Capitol for a few years, and I hear the term sales tax regressive.
Right. I want to say two things about the argument about being regressive. When you look at taxes, that regressivity is generally, when people are talking about that, they're talking about current income. And current income is a very poor measurement of somebody's well-being over their lifetime. Current income is a snapshot of where you are in your life in that year. If you're an entrepreneur or if you're a single proprietor, you could have had a bad year. Or if you're at the beginning of your career, if you're just out of high school, your income is likely to be low. But as you grow older and you gain more skills, your income tends to be high. So instead of taking a snapshot of your one-year income, we think it's better to look at consumption, because in the economics field, there's been a large academic literature that shows that people tend to smooth their consumption over their lifetime. They tend to consume more than their income in their earlier years as they're accumulating, buying houses, cars, getting an education. And then in the middle years, they have a much higher income relative to consumption. And then it smooths back out where consumption and income are more evenly matched, or actually consumption is higher than income when you're in retirement years. So we think it's, when you look at it on a consumption basis, it's the sales tax is not regressive when you're comparing to current consumption as opposed to current income. And the second thing I want to note about the regressivity is that it can be, it's not necessarily regressive. It's more negative. It's not progressive. I've looked at comparing just sort of a broad personal income tax switch to a sales tax. And by broadening it into different service areas, you're really just looking at a more of a flat. People pay, in general, the lower incomes pay a little bit more than the higher incomes, but not by much.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I see a lot of reports, but one of the, it's rare for a report to list some elements that are now tax exempt. You call them services or goods.
Right.
That are now tax exempt that could be taxed and how much they raise.
Correct.
So I want to go to this report laid out 25 ways to expand the sales tax base. And I just want to focus here. We have a graphic showing 10 of them. And it's they are eyebrow raisers. The first three items alone, extending our 5% state sales tax to motor fuels, an upper of $595.9 billion, food, that gets all of our attention, $536.9 million, and labor input into construction. This totals $1.6 billion. And then you have legal services. So if you... There's a lot of different scenarios in the report. One of them says if we cut our income taxes by $700 million and property taxes by $1.1 billion, that's a cut of $1.8 billion, right?
Am correct.
I right on the math? So if you need then to replace the $1.8 billion, one thing to have a discussion of is taxing the first five exempt items on this. Is this study advocating, recommending, expanding our sales tax to these very controversial changes, sir?
These are 25 of many items that can be, the tax base can be expanded to. The Beacon Hill Institute did not select these items, but we did generally agree with most of them in the list. And they are controversial. I know that food is one of the items.
I don't want to go to food yet, because I want to start with motor fuels, because it raises the it would raise the most money. Here's our gas tax, 30.9 cents a gallon, just raised in the last fiscal year, $999 million. Would extending the sales tax, our 5%, be in addition to our gas tax? I'm trying to understand it.
Sure. It would be in addition to the gas tax, but it would not be. We did not model it as being on top of the gas tax. In other words, you do not have a tax on a tax. It would sort of be next to the gas tax. So the base would not be a gallon of gas plus the fuel, motor fuels tax, and then the sales tax on top of both. It would just be on the pre-motor fuels tax.
Okay, help me understand.
Gallon,
because today I filled up my car. I paid $3.27.9, which means I paid 30.9 cents per gallon in gas tax. Would I then face an additional 5.5%?
On the $2.95, yes. On that, okay. Not on the 3.27 cents, whatever.
Okay, separate. So
yeah.
The cost of gas minus the gas tax is what the sales tax would be
correct
charged on. Thank you for the clarification. That is very important. Food, all types of food, just generally?
Yeah.
Just right now, the State Department of Revenue makes a distinction on takeout, eat here.
So. Right. You wouldn't need to figure out what the retailers would not need to figure out what is in the tax base and not. So it would be a little bit easier. This would be mostly it would be grocery stores. I think that's what, you know, food bought in grocery stores. But many states out there do include food in their sales tax base.
They do.
Yeah. Some of them tax it at a lower rate, but I think it's much simpler to have one simple rate instead of having to figure out. Massachusetts, we're notorious, where I'm from, of having different items in and out of the tax base. We have tennis shoes are in the tax base, but sneakers are not. Yes.
I won't ask how one differentiates there.
Yes.
I do not understand labor input into construction. How would you collect this? Who would pay it?
It would have to be collected by the contractors, the employers, and then they would have to pay it through to the Department of Revenue.
Okay, this is a new one to me. Legal services, we understand.
Sure.
Fuel and electricity for residential use, so this would add the 5% sales tax every time I pay my monthly utility bill.
Correct.
Okay, now let's put this in context. People would notice these additional sales taxes when they went to the grocery store, when they filled up their car, when they paid their utility bills. That is something people do with greater regularity than our property tax bills, which come in December. And when we settle up with the Department of Revenue paying our income tax in April 15th, wouldn't there be a lot of popular objection to extending the sales tax to some of these items?
I think when you extend taxes to any item, you're going to get some pushback, especially from folks in those industries. But I think that one thing you want to look at is that people do get their paychecks generally every other week or once a month or so. So they will see additional money in their paychecks. So there'll be some offset that they won't see. They'll see a little more regularly.
You're not a politician. You're an academic. Is this politically doable, do you think? and by that, I mean, can people be sold that they're going to come out ahead because they're getting a cut in income taxes and property taxes? But then every time they go to the gas station, grocery store, pay a electric bill.
Well, again, looking at it in those sort of narrow terms, it might be more difficult. But when we turn the page here in a bit and we see that the economic benefits, the opportunities are opening up with more private sector jobs, more disposable income, more investment, then if they see that, then maybe they will, folks will be a little more...
If they're part of the economic rising tide,
raising all boats, excuse me.
Before we go on, though, it's important to say, because when I did my first rush through this, it seemed to me like a tax shift. But on page 9, you add this caveat. Taxing items such as food or motor fuel inevitably generates claims of tax inequity. Okay, that's the unfairness?
Correct.
Tax shift. That problem can be easily overcome by providing low and moderate income households with a refundable income tax credit to cover purchases of basic goods and services like food, like fuel, like gas bills?
Yeah.
Okay. How many states offer low and moderate incomes a credit on their on sales taxes that they may have paid going to the grocery store?
Well, most don't offer per se for a sales tax. This would be on your income tax.
On the income tax.
Right. So this is similar to the earned income tax credit. There's a mechanism in place so you could very easily just sort of expand that.
Okay. So this is saying this doesn't, is this to blunt the argument that extending our sales tax to some of these items would most hurt the poor, Paul?
That is a way of looking at that. Although I personally, in my professional opinion, I disagree a little bit with the, as we talked about earlier, with the inequity argument, because I think that you're measuring it incorrectly. And if you measure it properly, the inequity is not nearly as steep as you think. The wealthy are buy caviar, where the poor buy potato chips. So there is a difference between the spending. So the inequity isn't quite as big as people think. But if it's still, you want to keep it more progressive. If you want to make it more progressive, you could take that alternative path.
Okay, deal with the press release from Democrats that are going to be forthcoming after this show airs and after tomorrow's press conference, that this is a tax shift onto the poor and moderate income and away from the wealthy. Just deal with that generic response.
Oh, that generic quote?
Argument, yeah.
I would say that this is two things. One is it's not inequitable. It's more equitable across the thing. It's less progressive, but it's not inequitable. And second, it's providing opportunity. More of the opportunity will be in the for employment and in the economy. So you're missing that point.
Okay.
So they're missing those.
The more jobs created, that
right.
they will be able to get potentially better wages.
Right. Your competitive posture of Wisconsin will be better relative to your competitor states than it was otherwise. So there'll just be more opportunity for those
Thank
folks.
You. This is a fascinating discussion. Now let's look at the tax swap, which means cut one set of taxes and broaden the sales tax that you call most interesting and most balanced. And that's on page 12 of the report, which will be available, if not tonight, tomorrow on the internet. And let's walk through this. Can you please?
Sure.
This is our last graphic.
So what we do is we have an across-the-board cut in income taxes by $730 million.
And that's about a 10% cut.
Right. And then a $1.1 billion cut in property tax, and it has to be evenly split across residential and commercial.
And that's about 11% cut. Okay.
Right. And then we expand the sales tax base to all those items, the 25 we talked about
all
earlier.
All 25?
Yes.
Okay, not just the 10 that we built the graphic on. Okay, thank you. The ones, and all 25 would total $2.6 billion, I think. Go ahead.
Right, and that's why you can actually reduce the sales tax to 4.47%, which is the first item here.
From 5%. Okay.
Right, so now you're actually giving all industries, even though you expanded the sales tax to other industries, say the retail sales industry and other industries that currently pay the sales tax, have a lower rate, and you're taking the distortion of the sales tax, mm-hmm. where it's heavily focused on the retail and wholesale sectors, and evening it out more to the other sectors.
Okay, then walk through the rest of it. So we're cutting, under this scenario, we would be able to cut our 5% state sales tax to 4.475. Go ahead.
Sure, and then we would increase private employment by about 10,580 jobs, roughly. Investment would go up by almost $1 billion, and real disposable income would go up by about $900 million. And then, and this is all in 2018, state revenues would be down about $21 million, generally due to the fact that income tax revenues have risen more recently faster than the sales tax. So there's just we set it up to be revenue neutral in the first year that we employ it, the fiscal 16, mm-hmm. and no, 15, and then just let the model run out and see what happens with the revenues after.
Do you phase in this model, or do you just make all these changes in 1 year?
It's all in 1 year.
All in 1 year.
Yeah.
Five programs in state government make up 80% plus of all state general fund spending. Aid to public schools, aid to local government, Medicaid, aid to higher ed, which is both our UW system and our technical colleges, and finally our prisons. Do you think this tax swap threatens those five critical services, Paul?
I don't see why it would, unless $21 million would be the threat. Our assumption in the modeling is that all of the revenues that were going to previous spending items in the budget, the new revenues are going to those same items. So everybody's made whole as far as we're concerned. And that's why in this scenario we don't have any public employment losses.
Okay, we started by saying that in Wisconsin we lose about 11.6 of our personal income to taxes. Under this tax swap, wouldn't we, if it's just a swap, revenue neutral, wouldn't we lose still about the same?
You would have the same number, the 11% would be correct, the mix would be different.
And the mix you think would be healthier?
Correct.
And
it would be healthier for the economy. You've got a very low sales tax with a reasonably narrow base, which distorts economic decisions among those that face the sales tax and don't. And then you have a fairly high income and property taxes, which especially if the income tax is brought down and replace with a sales tax, you'll have more investment, more employment, and more disposable income, and you'll see a general increase in the economy.
Have other states had the political will to make changes like this?
The one that I know recently that took place is in North Carolina. Okay. They've done a similar tax change. There's lots that have been looking at it in the past few years, but North Carolina has actually adopted it.
It's not lost on me that your press conference tomorrow and this interview comes 5 weeks before our election for governor. Does the Policy Institute want this to become a discussion in the final weeks of the election for governor?
I would assume that they would, the Policy Institute would like to have a discussion about tax policy in general. If it takes place in the election, that's great. If it takes place outside the election, that's good too.
And then final question, because we're almost out of time. What did you learn about Wisconsin and its tax structure that maybe is different than other states you've studied?
There's not a lot different other than your alcohol tax, which I wasn't surprised, but I did learn it. Is that your structure is fairly commonplace in the states, but you're a little bit behind in moving from the mid 20th century model to the 20th century model. In other words, capturing more of those service items in the sales tax and reducing your income taxes.
Which is most states then, do they get most of their general fund spending from just three sources like Wisconsin? Are income, personal and corporate, and sales?
Most states do, but they're starting to focus their mix a little bit more toward the sales tax and away from the income tax, as you see from your numbers.
Okay, great. Paul Bachman, Research Director at the Beacon Hill Institute for Public Policy Research at Suffolk University. Thanks so much for talking about your study. Tomorrow, I understand you're going to be briefing legislators. Wisconsin and I will also be covering that.
Oh, super.
Paul, thanks for talking to Wisconsin and I.
Well, thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.